Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Maggie. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Alex.
Okay, so today we have a very special guest. It doesn't even matter what the topic is. Let's just introduce our guest, right? It's my brother, Alex.
Hey.
So we're excited to have him on. We've been talking about having this discussion for many months. And we, you know, the market has been somewhat tumultuous. I don't know what the right word would be, perhaps. And sometimes we record our episodes like just a few weeks in advance before they go out. And on this particular topic, we were like, we can't record. We need to record this and then like put it out days later because, you know, everything we talk about could change 4 days later. So we're finally doing it. Thank you for joining us, Alex.
Happy to be here.
We are going to have a discussion on all things cryptocurrency. We're going to talk about blockchain a little bit, Bitcoin, NFTs, which I still don't fully understand. So Alex will explain it to us. And Mike, I think it's worth, like, as we introduce Alex, not that we're not going to give him like a great bio and introduction, but some podcasts bring on like the most trusted financial expert in like cryptocurrency, right? And they like scour the earth looking for them. Mike, is that what we've done here today?
Absolutely not. And in fact, I would go so far as to say on every episode we've done, we've made a point to not be experts in anything we talk about.
Yeah.
I think that's part of our charm.
Yeah, we're having casual discussions amongst friends. Some of our friends more well-educated on certain topics than others. On this topic, to be fair, my brother is pretty well-educated, right? He's like a self-taught and very passionate about this space. And Alex and I have had many discussions over the past few months. And it, some of them have actually inspired me to start investing in Bitcoin and then cry later. But there have been like fun and fascinating discussions, which are in the spirit of what Mike and I always push for, which is like there's value in friends talking about this stuff and having open dialogues and not being afraid to share their hopes, their fears, what they're trying, what they're learning, what's working well, what didn't work. And so we're going to do a little bit of that on today's episode while we talk about crypto.
And I promise to let Alex speak at some point during this episode, but I'd also like to point out that Maggie, you like to say that I'm somewhat of a brother to you and that I pick on you all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it is particularly exciting that you now have two brothers to pick on you in one episode.
Mike and I do have a very brother-sister relationship. So this is going to be sort of like my two older brothers, but Mike's younger than me. So sort of like my older and younger brother ganging up on me. We'll see how it goes.
Love it.
Alex, first question is, when I was 5 years old, did you break my arm?
Before I get to that question, Maggie, first of all, thanks, guys, for allowing me to join. Longtime listener, big fan of what you guys are doing. Yeah, just excited that I have a chance to be a part of this conversation and love where it's starting. Sounds like many of the podcasts I've listened to from you too, where you hop around a bit and happy to start right there. So 5 years old, Maggie, did I break your arm? Was that the question?
Yeah.
I did break your arm. Do you remember how it happened? I mean, it certainly wasn't a malicious, purposeful.
I know. It was a fun story. I just thought it'd be fun to have it on the record that you did break my arm when I was five. You were body slamming me or trying to swing me around. Like,
yeah, I remember trying to throw you. I had your arm. I was trying to, do a karate move where I threw you over top of my head, I guess.
And
didn't support your weight. And
the best part is
on a bunch of things.
Yeah. The best part is I think our mom was like in the shower at the time and like didn't want to believe that my arm was broken and didn't really want to get me proper medical care. But eventually there was a realization that was broken. Okay. I'm getting us off tangent. I just thought that would be fun to get that formally on the record.
Okay. How did your arm feel?
It's feeling good. They're fully functioning. They're a little shorter than average, but they're fully functioning. Okay. So let's kick it off.
We're going to be, and again, not experts here. And I'm not even sure you could call us well-educated on this, but we're passionate about it and we're interested in talking about this. So we're going to be talking about cryptocurrencies and NFTs. And I think it's important that we start with just some basics around what this is. So the first is that the platform for cryptocurrencies and NFTs is built on what's called a blockchain. And Maggie, I know you are an expert in blockchain technology, so why don't you give the explanation here?
You know, it's funny. I think you're joking that I'm an expert. I once had to do a legitimate work project years ago when blockchain was brand new, and I learned a ton about blockchain. So I actually know a lot about blockchain. But I'm going to keep passing the buck and let Alex define blockchain for us.
All right, good.
So blockchain is, it's three things. It is a immutable, means it can't be changed, immutable. It's decentralized, meaning it's not stored on one central server or by one central authority or company. And the last thing is it's a ledger. So that's what it is. It's a decentralized ledger that can't be changed. And I guess we're going to segue into whether we're talking about Bitcoin or any of the other blockchains, right?
Well, yeah. And I think that's a great definition, Alex. And I think the thing about blockchain for people to understand is the idea that the existence of blockchain is the technology that allows cryptocurrency to be a thing and to be in existence. But blockchain is much bigger than crypto, right? Like blockchain is this really fascinating technology that we're not going to get into too much today, more than this at least, that allows and can solve many other problems and challenges around the world. Right, particularly in other like less developed countries. So just understanding that crypto leverages the blockchain technology, I think is kind of all you need to know, really. And then you can like impress people at a dinner party and like drop blockchain into the discussion. So let's talk about cryptocurrency. Like, what is cryptocurrency?
Cryptocurrency, and you guys may have a better book definition than this, but it's an alternative form of storing value. The blockchain that we just defined is what enables it. But as opposed to the what we call fiat currencies, which are the currencies that our countries recognize as legal tender and allow you to pay your taxes in, this is a blockchain-based currency that's stored in cryptographic hashes on a blockchain. And I may be getting some of this right or wrong, but essentially it's a digital version of our currency. So when you think about, you know, all that happens, Mike and Maggie, you go out to dinner, you split the bill. One of you pays, the other one owes the other half, you pay with Venmo. All that's happening there when you make that payment is that something's getting updated in Maggie's Venmo account, and Mike, something's getting updated in your Venmo account. They're just changing that. No, nothing's actually changing hands there, right? So this is just the sort of evolution of moving everything truly to digital. Again, probably not the best, most accurate definition, but this is my lay take as we move from fiat, or used to be gold standard, a government recognized currencies, into this global blockchain enabled cryptocurrency. And the start of which is Bitcoin. And now there's, of course, many others.
That's a pretty good explanation. Alex, I am impressed.
Now we're fueled here by this monster drink. It's about halfway down. You'll see the pace change as we move through this.
So. I agree. I thought that was a great explanation on all fronts.
So as part of this discussion, we're going to spend part of the time talking about cryptocurrencies and their value as an investment. But then I also want to transition and talk about NFTs, which is something that is not a currency, but built on the same technology, and Alex, something that you are very involved in. So before we transition into cryptocurrencies, just for the purposes of level setting, can you give an explanation about what NFTs are?
Sure. So as a segue from the cryptocurrencies into NFTs. So technically an NFT, I mean, by its very acronym, is non-fungible token. And I would imagine many of your listeners at this point have heard of what NFT stands for, but the idea of fungibility. So back to our fiat or even cryptocurrency example, Mike, if you give me a dollar and I give you back four quarters, we both have the same amount. Didn't really matter whether you had that dollar or four quarters. They both spend the same. So fungibility is the idea that that something can be broken apart into indiscernible pieces, right? So it doesn't matter. There's 10 dimes that equal that dollar or 20 nickels. It's all the same, right? When you get into things that are, say, the Mona Lisa, a piece of artwork, a song, these are things that can't be broken apart into indiscernible pieces. So by its definition, an NFT, a non-fungible token, is a token that is registered on the blockchain, much like cryptocurrency is. But unlike cryptocurrency that can be broken apart into indiscernible pieces and mean the same thing, a non-fungible token is in itself unique and can't be broken apart into pieces. Now, as it turns out, you can tokenize, and that's a whole nother conversation. You can securitize, you can tokenize NFTs, but they can't be broken apart. They are unique. And they are stored on the blockchain. So the most popular cases recently, so NFTs have been around for 3 or 4 years, at least 4 years. The most popular project that really kicked off the big boom in them was in February when NBA Top Shots started doing just a staggering amount of sales. And all they really did was turn what used to be physical trading cards into digital still images and digital videos. And the market, the collectibles market, moved on those quickly. And the numbers that got put through there all of a sudden started getting the kind of press that made all these other NFT projects, some of which had been around for years, gain a lot of attention. And we'll get into those as you want to know more.
So an NFT to me is still the one that's like the hardest for me to wrap my head around. But I think you do a fantastic job explaining it, Alex. But I'm curious, is this a fair oversimplification of an NFT using your kind of artwork and collectibles example of, essentially that NFT is assigned to, I don't know if assigned is the right word, but it is connected to a digital piece of something that you now own, like a piece of artwork.
Sure. It could be a piece of artwork. It could be a song. It's anything that's digital. And it's been minted on a blockchain. So Maggie, Mike, you could create something. I don't know what the
Friends on Fire logo.
You could rank a Friends on Fire logo in Photoshop. You could go out to a number of different sites or exchanges. You could mint that logo on the blockchain. And then back to the idea of a blockchain being a mutable, decentralized ledger. The whole idea is that it's recorded that what you would call original Friends on Fire logo created on this date was minted by this person on this date. And then it's now a thing. It can now be, it could be a store of value. Someone can purchase it from you. It can be transferred over to them. But what's never in doubt is that it was the legitimate Friends on Fire logo that you created on this date. It was minted on this date. And then its whole history thereafter is stored on the blockchain for all time.
I'm really oversimplifying it, but it's like a digital collectible, right? If someone has to want that Friends on Fire logo is only worth something if somebody else wants it.
No, that's exactly right. Yes. I mean, that's the biggest question for most people is, great, so what can I do with this NFT? And the answer is still a bit muddy. You don't necessarily own any of the intellectual property rights to that logo, even though you've purchased that NFT. Other people. So in that blockchain metadata specific to that NFT, it will tell you exactly, it's usually on the IFPS, but it'll tell you where that image is being referenced from. Anyone there can go and get it. One of the biggest sales that, again, kicked off this frenzy of NFTs was back earlier this year when the big Beeple, his 5,000 digital images, he created one every day for 5,000 days. That was the largest, it broke all kinds of records, but it sold for $69 million. I think Sotheby's or Christie's auctioned it off, and it's what got everybody's attention, along with NBA Top Shots. So that $69 million JPEG, because that's all it really is a JPEG. It's just, it turns out that someone actually owns the original JPEG, but the pixel by pixel JPEG, I went and found right away. I downloaded it. It's about a 360 megabyte file on my computer. I own pixel by pixel the exact same thing that someone paid $69 million for. And that just makes the question even bigger. What does it matter?
Yeah, a collector's not going to buy yours because yours isn't That's minted exactly as right. the original one. So it's just like a piece of art, right? I can go buy a copy of Van Gogh's painting
right. yes.
for $5 in a poster shop, but it's not the original, which is worth, hundreds of millions.
Yes, and I mean, it's interesting to know that truly, like, how do you know the original is the original? Like, with the blockchain, you really can tell from the point that that was minted. I mean, we assume that there was some sort of, chain of custody and authenticity to the fact that wherever the Mona Lisa is right now, that is truly the original Mona Lisa. But in fact, it's not like eyes were kept on that thing since the moment that it was painted.
Well, people put a lot of efforts into trying to fake stuff like that.
The forgery market is getting bigger than ever for just that reason, yes.
So I think we have to now mint a Friends on Fire NFT. Alex, can you help us with this?
Oh, for sure. You could
like
do that.
Like a hologram version of like the original. We'll work on that. The problem is, Mike, back to our example, there's got to be a market for someone who wants to buy that and own it other than the two of us.
I think somebody will buy this.
My mom will buy it just out of pity that she's like, oh, that's cool. If I can get her to understand what an NFT is. Okay.
All right. So one of the things that I think is an important, maybe philosophical conversation about cryptocurrencies is understanding what you two were alluding to, where, it's still kind of a collectible, like somebody has to place a value on it. And one of the best explanations of this is in the book Sapiens, which is, for anybody who hasn't read it, phenomenal book about kind of the history of humankind. And one of the themes of Sapiens is what the author calls shared myths. And he gives a whole bunch of great examples. And I think this is an example from the book. I read it like a couple years ago, but he talks about the company. I believe he talked about Fiat, the company. And he said that like a company structure is a shared myth. There is no physical entity that is a company. The structure of the company is just whatever people say it is. The earnings of that company are just numbers that are on pieces of paper. So people have to believe in the concept of a company. And this is the shared myth. And I also think back to, Maggie, maybe you discussed this in business school. It's kind of a famous example of the tulip bubble in the Netherlands a couple hundred years ago. And so what happened was, I'm going to butcher this again. Did no research on this episode, so this is kind of just from vague memory. But basically, there was a marketplace created for dried tulips in the Netherlands, and people gave them a value. And so people were buying and selling tulips from each other. And the only reason it worked is because a large number of people all got together and said, we are placing a value on these tulips, and the value kept going up. And it was like the most famous and perhaps first economic bubble of its kind. It, of course, crashed and tulips are now worthless because you could just grow them. But this is an example of a shared myth that tulips have some inherent value that are worth trading and you can use them as some sort of currency. And that's sort of what cryptocurrencies and NFTs are. In the same way that US dollars are a shared myth. Like if I have a $1 bill, it's just a piece of paper. The only reason it has value is because the person I'm giving it to also believes in this myth that it's worth $1 and they're going to give me something in exchange for this piece of paper. Cryptocurrency is the same thing. Like you just have a digital currency that Alex described very well a little bit earlier. It is the records are kept differently. It's decentralized, but it is still two people associate a value with this thing, and they're going to give each other physical items or other services in exchange for this thing because they both believe that it has value.
No, I mean, I think that's a great way to start out that idea. You go for it, Matt. It gives me a few other things.
Well, I just think it's, well, first off, Mike and Alex, you guys have never met before today. I think it's fascinating, Mike, that you brought up Sapiens because I've not read that book, but Alex has talked about it a number of times and it has been on my reading list from him talking about it. So I just think it's funny that you brought it up on this call of all times.
Because we're both your brothers, right?
I know you are both my brothers. It's in our blood. So and I think it's a fascinating concept. And I think, I had heard the tulips thing before, but it's been a while. And I think the interesting thing, kind of taking it from like tulips to the US dollar to crypto even, is, all of those, the tulips did not it was a shared myth. It did not have any sort of perhaps like centralized system put in place around it, right? The dollar has become more of a shared myth because there isn't actually like a currency system set up around it. And so there's trust with the other person that thing will be, that the dollar I hand you today will be worth something, you know, tomorrow for me to reuse. And then there's
let me jump in with one very important point, because you're right, that the tulip market was quite small relative to like a global economy. The US dollar is now a globally used currency. So there are many more countries and people using it. The reason Bitcoin is more popular than other cryptocurrencies, and Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, there's like hundreds of cryptocurrencies, right?
That's right.
So the reason Bitcoin is popular is because, and more valuable, is because more people are using it. And the more people that use it, the stronger the blockchain becomes, the more accurate. And that is also part of its value and why the tulip market crashed.
Well, and I think to that point, Mike, I guess taking a step back, the idea is like, why? Why do we need cryptocurrency, right? What's the point? The point is that, you know, we've seen and for some amount of time, these government-backed currencies, and again, this is not my area of expertise, so I'll stumble through this, but, you know, they are ripe for all the things that we've seen with economic collapses that were based on bad actors, you know, in the investment markets, all the things that can you know, cause inflation and devalue currencies. So the idea that you could all of a sudden take control of your currency, not have government agencies involved, not be at the whim of larger people with money in terms of what your money is worth today, tomorrow, next year, and instead sort of control your own destiny. So the idea around, you know, it's now known as DeFi, but decentralized finance, is to take big banks and government out of money and allow two entities that don't necessarily know each other and therefore don't trust each other to exchange things of value. So, and then, you know, and you can get into this whenever we want to, if it's appropriate for this or not, but anybody that's listening, it's interested in Bitcoin. It's, you know, it's a white paper you can go and download and sort of understand the idea of how this works and how you get around the idea of, we don't need to get into the double spend problem, but there's some interesting ideas sort of related to where Bitcoin came from and the why of it that I think are helpful if you do want to get a more holistic understanding of cryptocurrency and why this is even a thing.
It's fascinating. I think it will be helpful to kind of segue into some of our personal stories, which is 90% your stories, Alex, which is why we wanted to have this discussion with you on, you know, now that we've talked about what all these things are and a little bit even about kind of just I like the Sapiens point, guys, on just how these things even have a place in existence and kind of, you know, how we could potentially think about them. I just think it's interesting to kind of hear, like, Alex, how did you get into this space? What have you been doing in this area? Like, what are your kind of just like, what's your personal experiences with it so far?
Awesome. Well, this is the part where I can actually sign up for some amount of accuracy, because I'm telling my own story rather than trying to explain complex ideas that I may or may not have the right pieces to describe. Okay. So really, it all came about for me earlier this year because of the fact that I work for one of the largest online art and photography marketplace sites in the world. So we're known as Fine Art America and also Pixels.com. Earlier this year, just because of what we do. So we are home to over 700,000 living artists and photographers who sell their content through our site. We also have hundreds of strategic big publishing partners like Time and Sports Illustrated and Getty and Condé Nast. The idea that we exist as a platform to help content owners monetize their content really just means that we're a natural fit for NFTs. NFTs being another way that content owners can monetize their content, monetize their paintings, their photography, whatever it is that they've created. Now you see them minting as NFTs and doing drops around one for one pieces or limited edition pieces. Well, all of this is to say, when NFTs showed up on my radar, so did crypto. And this was back in the beginning of March. So I have I've been a relatively modest saver. I don't know what that's a euphemism for, but I have not necessarily been as aggressive in saving as I could or should have been through my early precious compounding years. And so I have been more recently sort of trying to play catch up and do things that are a little bit more prudent in terms of looking out for my all too quickly coming retirement years. But at the same time, I've always said I would never, ever invest in stocks. That's just gambling, right? So I was always in a, you know, in a low fee index fund that replicated either the S&P 500 or the total stock market, and very strongly feeling that that's the only place my money should be. Not the only place, but where most of my money should be. And so realizing it was just a new shiny rock. NFTs show up on my radar back in March, and so does Coinbase and crypto. And then I see the opportunity. I start watching these crypto prices. I'm looking at Bitcoin. I'm looking at Ethereum. I'm understanding how it works. To some extent, it was something new and interesting to kind of figure out and build out as a new hobby. So from there, I do know it was. And again, these are pieces that I can speak very accurately about because they happened to me. So back in March, I start with $250 there, $500 there. I'm just moving it out of a checking account into Coinbase and purchasing at the then market rate, either Bitcoin, Ethereum. And I started out with some of what I understood then to be some of the more attractive cryptocurrencies. So Litecoin, Uniswap, Chainlink, and was making modest investments. And at that point, I'm also checking in with my wife. We are in our 40s. We don't have kids. We're not going to have kids. So, you know, I have a little bit more leeway to make some interesting financial decisions.
You don't have to put anyone through college.
No. But I also, you know, I'm involving Michelle and saying, you know, hey, look, what do you think about us doing 5,000 in, 10,000 in? And so that's how it started. That's where I sort of started picking it up in my spare time on the weekends and the evenings.
So let me ask you a question on a couple kind of follow-up questions to that. How much have you invested in the market over the years? I don't mean like how much money. I mean, like how much has that been a focus of your investment strategy?
Well, it was really almost exclusively my retirement money, right?
Okay. You weren't like buying index funds or buying individual
exactly.
stocks.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So when you decided, and I totally hear you on the beginning of kind of how you like mentally got to the place of saying like, hey, I want to start thinking about, you know, growing my money and all this stuff. What made you choose crypto versus just buying into the stock market? Like you almost passed that and went right to crypto.
Sure. Yeah. I think that the idea of blockchain and crypto, I mean, as soon as I started, I mean, that to me, and I came by way of NFTs. So I kind of came, you know, from the most current iteration sort of backwards into Bitcoin and then blockchain technology in general. It blew my mind. And I did a terrible job earlier of describing like what it is and really didn't even get into applications. It will change this world. Blockchain is going to be bigger than the internet. I know that just seems like blows your mind crazy. Yeah. Like the internet's what connects us all. It's what's allowing us to have this conversation today and everybody who's listening to this to hear us. I truly believe blockchain is going to dwarf what the internet does. Its applications are mind blowing. So really,
particularly in like other countries, I'd say too, like in terms of like we're a pretty advanced country, but yes, countries that don't have the infrastructure of like real estate and titling property. And like, so there's these fascinating uses of blockchain, which again, we don't have to get too much into it, but I don't disagree with your, you know, prediction or comment.
So that's what had me all of a sudden saying, I want to start doing this is I was a little bit caught up in just I don't know if I'd romanticize the idea of blockchain and being an early mover in that space, but I felt like I understood enough to get myself involved. And then I started and I don't know when in this conversation or story, we're going to make that leap, but at some point I was making, we could argue, relatively intelligent, relatively prudent decisions in terms of getting into the crypto investing space. And then there was a point where something happened and I started making not very wise decisions, just in terms of what I was doing and how much I was investing in it.
I think that's a pretty common evolution of behavior for people who invest, regardless of even if it's just the stock market. I mean, you put a little money in, you feel comfortable with $200, then $500, then all of a sudden it's $100,000 and you're like, what happened?
Mike, I love hearing you say that. It does make me, misery loves company. It makes me feel better to know that that's not unique to me, but I can tell you that truly over the last really month, I've literally lost sleep, and that's not like me. Part of my secret to success in life and money is that I don't worry about it. And I know that that's not really the point of the show. It's that you should be proactively worrying about it, not worrying necessarily, but proactively thinking about it and making purposeful strategic decisions. I have more or less been, you know, relatively on the ball and also not worried about it. And it's always worked out well. I'm learning a lot of things. It's just that they've been more expensive
lessons
than I would have hoped, maybe.
Well, it's interesting. So you, as you're doing this, Alex, as you're kind of in the maybe middle stages of the journey that you just talked about, you and I are talking about it some, right? And you kind of got me a little caught up in it. Like I was like, ooh, I want to get a ticket on this train, you know?
Yeah.
And I came at it from a very different, similar actually angle to you on kind of what made me interested, but I guess different, was one of my biggest regrets, which I've talked about on the show before, is not investing when I was younger, right? I didn't know what to do with my money. I was kind of paralyzed by options and I just held on to a lot of cash, which had I invested it, 10, 15, 2, 3, 4. Well, I was investing 2, 3, 4 years ago, but had I invested it 5, 10, 15 years ago, I would have like double the amount of money I have right now. And I just was, I was paralyzed with options. I didn't know what to do. And I just didn't. And so with this, I was like, well, I don't want to let another moment like that pass me by, right? When I believe something has potential, which I did with Bitcoin, I guess still do. I was like, well, I don't want to do what I did 10 years ago, which is like, well, I don't know enough. And I got to think of, you know, and I just hem and haw over it for another decade. So I was like, well, I want to get in on this. So I started buying some Bitcoin. Right. And so did my husband a little bit.
Yes. And actually to the point that Mike just made, I'm sure there's a name to this phenomenon, but this idea that Maggie, same thing, you look back and say, oh, if I would have done what I'm now thinking of doing 10, 20 years ago, this would have happened. This idea that what I missed out on, what I could have done, what I argue I should have done, could now be put into place, or I'm not going to miss that same opportunity again. I feel like that's what I've most learned. That's not necessary. I mean, you could have invested that 20 years ago, the market, you know, tanked over the last 20 years. And so you had more for keeping it in cash, right? It's easy enough to pretend that what did happen is about to happen again. And it's also one of the sort of hallmarks of bubbles as well, is this idea that things are going to continue to go the way that they have gone. Yes, when you and Greg started making your move into crypto as well, I was both excited and a little nervous that I was going to be responsible for at least part of getting you there.
Well, you were good. You were not like pushing us in any way. I mean, you were excited about it and your energy was contagious. And I was like, well, I want to learn more about this. I want to do this. And I did. And then I very quickly lost a bunch of money because we invested at like a peak and it just had like, it kind of dropped off a cliff like a week or two later. Now, actually, I'll say just like many things, it's back up. So I'm at the point now where I'm whole, if not a little bit up from where I got in.
Because to be fair, you never lost anything. You didn't realize that.
I never sold it. Yes. Well, yes. Exactly. Right. Yes. Had I sold it, you know, 2 weeks later, I would have lost something. But I also, in fairness, just like with the market, I was going into it for the long haul. I wasn't trying to buy it to like sell it 2 weeks later and make a quick buck. I was saying like, I think this will be a good long-term investment. I think it will diversify some of my investments. I can afford to lose the money if something crazy were to happen. And so I was, you know, excited to get into it and kind of like be a part of something, even, you know, on not a tiny amount of money, but also not like, you know, my whole life savings or anything. Mike, I am very curious, why have you not purchased any Bitcoin yet?
I have. I've been investing since 2016.
Why did I feel like we had this conversation and you like...
Because you went ahead and just decided to put a whole bunch of money in Bitcoin without consulting me. And I think you interpreted that in your own mind as saying,
you just, oh, I've never heard you talk about it.
I don't have a lot of money in it. So I got into it in 2016, but I did not go in and actually buy Bitcoin. I did something through my normal brokerage account. called the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. So sure. It's just a fund that you can go buy and sell immediately through Schwab, and it mirrors the performance of Bitcoin. So in 2016, I did this for a few months when it was very volatile and ended up losing about $5,000 at the time. And I was just like, I don't know which way this is going. It's bothering me too much to keep track of it. I'm just going to get out of it. And I've dabbled since then. And recently I put $5,000 into it, maybe like 8 months ago.
That same fund or like directly into
Bitcoin? Same fund.
Okay.
And I'm down a few percent right now. And I'm basically just kind of thinking, if it triples in value, that's nice. If it goes down to zero, I'm okay losing $5,000. And that's the extent of my involvement in Bitcoin.
And Mike, to be fair, you also have not realized that $5,000 loss.
No,
you said earlier, you said you lost five.
Yeah, I did. So I was like, I lost it and sold it at a loss.
Got it. Okay.
And then like off and on kind of dabbled in it. I'm not sure what my net profit on Bitcoin is. It's probably zero.
You also do that fairly typically, not with with other things. Like you do a lot more buying and selling of stocks than I do, for example. So
Yeah, and I should have added, Maggie, just what you said earlier too. That's an important piece of what I was looking to do when I was out on Coinbase, starting to get into crypto investing. The idea from the get-go was to hold these things long-term, which is absolutely counter to what most people are out there doing. And I'm not saying there aren't people like Mike that are doing some, you know, small strategic investments in the biggest blue chip in crypto there is, which is Bitcoin. But I certainly wasn't out there thinking that I was going to buy these things, because that's what most people out there, that is where Coinbase has turned, IPO, and where these crypto the exchanges are getting so much of their money from, is because people are actively trading.
He's like day traders.
Day trading. Yeah, yes, exactly that. Because when you have a market like crypto that's so volatile, there's a huge opportunity to make money off the swings. I was looking to buy in at, you know, wherever I was in that market, assuming that I wasn't at a peak, and hold it for the long term, because I felt legitimately for Bitcoin and then also for Ethereum, which at the time most NFTs were based on, now, you know, some good amount of NFTs are based in or built on, that those were going to be around long term, and that was a good long term investment.
So one thing that I think would be helpful for our listeners is, you know, we're talking about what this is. I think there's a lot of curiosity on this topic. We're sharing some of our own stories and experiences with crypto and Bitcoin, et cetera. I think a lot of people have the question of like, well, should I be doing it, right? Is it right for me? Is it, you know, how would I know? And one of my favorite things I've come across recently, and guys, this is in the show notes for you, I don't know if you've looked at it, is this decision tree that Skim Money put out. So Skim, S-K-I-M-M, I'll put a link in the show notes. But they put out this like kind of funny infographic that's like, are you ready to invest in crypto? It's not funny. Sorry. It's actually like really good and simple. And I love it. It's kind of like cheeky and funny in some parts, but it's a decision tree, so it's better digested visually, but I'm going to like walk you through it for a second, because I actually think it's really smart the way it kind of lays it out. Basically, it's saying like, are you ready to invest in crypto? If you think you're not interested, that's okay. You don't need crypto. Your life will be fine without it. Go invest in index funds. You'll be fine. But if you're interested in crypto, the question is why, right? So one of their things is like FOMO. So you have fear of missing out, which was a little bit of why I did it. And their answer to FOMO is like, spend more time researching it. If your answer is to diversify your portfolio, which was also part of my reason, mine was, in fairness, diversification and FOMO. They're like, do you understand it? And if you don't, spend more time researching it. And if you do, and you understand, like, again, even just to the depth of kind of what we've talked about here today, understanding it, their next question is, how's your money? How's your financial life? Do you have an emergency fund? Are you planned for retirement? Do you have a bunch of debt you need to pay off? And if you're on track with all those things, and you're comfortable with the risk, which is their other question, then bring it on, right? And so in all three of our cases, right, we've got healthy emergency funds. We're going to be okay if we lose our job tomorrow, right? We're not sitting on tons of debt, and we're comfortable with the risk, right? Which is what led us to even get to this point. And then their next question is, can you afford to lose the cash that you put in, which is kind of related to the risk question. And if you are going to be okay if you lose that cash, then go for it. Because it is still a pretty volatile and early market, right? I think the interesting thing is, you know, all the other answers to all of it are, you know, crypto might not be right for you right now. if you're not comfortable with the risk, if you don't have your financial life in order, if you don't fully understand it, you know, all of those things. And so I just really love their decision tree because I think they do a great job kind of breaking down what the average person should even be, you know, thinking about crypto if they're curious and wanting to know if it's for them.
And you'll link to this in the show notes, right?
Yeah, so we'll put a link to it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's great. I'm glad you shared it with me in advance. I don't think there's anything that whoever wrote this or designed this or created this meant to be cheeky at all. It seems very, there's just not supposed to be anything funny about
it. Yeah, you're right. Very, it's not funny. I just like the way they wrote it.
But what I found interesting is that to me, it's more like a labyrinth where like a maze where you're going through and in all likelihood, you're going to hit a dead end. And there's only one just set of answers that get you to go for it.
Yes.
All of these other scenarios point to crypto probably isn't right for you right now. Yes. I thought that was interesting and really smart. I think this is great. And a good way if you're listening and thinking like, you know, where do I start from here? Are you ready to invest in crypto? Walking yourself through this decision tree, just well done by whoever created this and good to share.
It was a skim money. And you're right. All the answers lead to no, unless you can like meet this crazy labyrinth of yeses that somewhere most people are going to get stopped on one of those somewhere along the way.
You know, I would also say, Maggie, that diagram, that decision tree, that can be applied to any type of investment, really.
Yeah,
so,
very true.
So let's talk about the pros and the cons of investing in cryptocurrency. And please note, disclaimer, we are not recommending doing one or the other. All three of us have some amount of money in cryptocurrency. I think all three of us have lost a certain amount of money in cryptocurrency. But let's talk about the pros. One is that it is a form of diversification. You could also argue that investing in wheelbarrows is a diversification tactic. But if you are interested in just trying out different investments, one of the pros of cryptocurrency is that it reacts differently than the stock market. And then because of its volatility, there is an opportunity to make a lot of money. You know, Alex, if what you are saying about the future of blockchain comes true, you know, there is unlimited upside to the value of these. And so you don't know where we are in the value cycle. Now, on the downside or the cons, it is extremely risky. It is very speculative. The difference between investing in Bitcoin versus a large company like, you know, AT&T, one that I really like, is that AT&T has physical assets. They have employees. They generate revenue. There is stuff that there is a basic level of value that company has, regardless of what investors believe in its future earnings potential. With Bitcoin, there is no asset. It is decentralized by its nature. And going back to the tulip example, it is a shared myth at this point. We believe that there is, you know, value in it, but it is extremely risky. And if you are not open to losing 100% of your investment, you should think twice about whether or not you want to invest in it.
Well, Mike, we did forget to mention that El Salvador has recently become the first country in the world to make cryptocurrency Bitcoin their legal tender.
Mm-hmm.
It's not working out so well so far from what I've been reading, but just wanted to add that.
Being a first mover doesn't always equal success. So anyway, make your own decisions about Bitcoin. It could be interesting and fun. You may make some money. You may lose all of your money. It is like any other investment. So treat it with caution and then make the right decision for yourself.
In addition to treating it with caution, I would just say, you know, back to the kind of decision tree we were talking about, don't feel like you have to do it, right? Like don't get in on the FOMO angle, right? Like which is what some people get into, myself even a little bit, right? So speaking of FOMO, should we talk about the last thing?
Worst FOMO story ever. Sure.
The most expensive FOMO story ever, you mean?
Yeah, but like a lot of these things we're talking about, not to say that people haven't realized gains or losses here, but yes, this is not yet. Yes, it's involving more money than I'm comfortable with, but these are not realized losses. So the story doesn't necessarily, nor am I expecting it to have a bad ending.
Yeah, we don't know the ending yet.
No, so. We don't know the ending yet, but I know the beginning and I know how I got here. And that's what takes my breath away and has me losing a little sleep at night is just how these things, like one thing happened and then the next, then the next, and here we are. And I wake up saying like, wait, what happened? Wait, how did we get here? So yeah.
Okay, so what happened?
Okay, so I was out back to investing little bits here and there on Coinbase. And, you know, I think at some point I'll depart from the actual numbers here. But I think early on it was, you know, hey, you know, how do you feel if we have $5,000 or $10,000 in cryptocurrency? And that's where it started out. And they were in the blue chips of crypto. These were not altcoins or the smaller, more speculative projects that you can invest in cryptocurrency.
Which are, by the way, those smaller coins are often called shit coins by many people. So just a fun term as people.
They are. The most popular wish is Dogecoin. Yes. Of which I do not own any because that would be crazy, right? But somehow would have no interest in something like Dogecoin. But NFTs, because they are in the space that I work in, and I have other partners, business partners, clients, friends, coworkers who are active in the crypto and NFT space. Exactly that. FOMO is what brought me into the, you know, the idea of purchasing NFTs. And so, in the same way that you can go out on Coinbase and turn your USD into the cryptocurrency of your choice, you can then take the cryptocurrency of your choice. And we'll speak in terms of most NFTs. We'll talk about Ethereum, which is the blockchain that most NFTs are minted and trade on. You can then take your Ethereum and purchase an NFT. And again, it's super cool. This is a new technology. You're able to do it interacting with a smart contract, which is just a bit of code that's been put out on the Ethereum blockchain that has the rules in place for you to be able to buy and sell and trade the NFTs that were minted there. So one of the biggest projects from back in 2017 from a company called Larva Labs was called CryptoPunks. It is thought of, though not actually the first, as one of the very first NFT projects. In June of 2017, they gave away these 10,000, I think the 24 by 24 pixel characters that had any combination of characteristics that were computer generated through AI, that this computer program spit out these 10,000 JPEGs that they call CryptoPunks. They gave them away. Back in March, when I noticed them and I'm becoming educated in the NFT space, I see CryptoPunks. I think that's interesting. And then as time goes on, I realize what's happening in the NFT space. I see it happening around me and I realize, well, hey, I'm super, super bullish on blockchain. I'm pretty bullish on cryptocurrency. And now I realize that NFTs are going to be the way that collectibles, you know, the what happens to them, the evolution of collectibles, the fact that you don't have to worry about where your card is kept or is this a fake, like you can guarantee authenticity every single time, that will change the game in collectibles. And just a couple months ago, I was at the National Trading Card Show in Chicago, and I saw more money being, you know, it's, you can read up about it, but there is a huge boom. The pandemic brought on this huge amount of interest and money back into the collectible market. And so physical collectibles, specifically trading cards, are skyrocketing in value. I see this dovetailing nicely with the NFT space. And I realize, okay, CryptoPunks, while there's all, and there are, because it's so easy to mint an NFT, anyone can go out there and do it, not just Friends on Fire logos. You can draw a squiggly line. People are minting NFTs, their farts as NFTs. There's all kinds of crazy nonsense out there. Most of it is crazy nonsense. But I knew it. These CryptoPunks, every instinct about me growing up collecting basketball cards, going to the card show, seeing what's happening in the space, understanding blockchain and NFTs said, these CryptoPunks are going to be worth an insane amount of money. And I knew this back, you know, March, April, May, and I'm seeing the price, the entry level, we call it floor price, but the cheapest of one of these 10,000 little JPEGs was at that point, like 20,000, 30,000. And I'm seeing it going up. And I knew at that time, I talked to my wife about it. I was like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but we should consider this investment.
We should spend $20,000 on a digital postage stamp.
Yeah, at that point, it was a little bit over 60. And so I'm having that conversation. I know a normal person with their wife is having that, who doesn't have the kind of money to be doing that. Hey, I think this is the kind of thing that could like take years off of our working life. We should do this. And so I moved some money around to at least, and really, guys, you got to wrap me in if this is too detailed and we need to shorten this story.
We do need to wrap it up soon, but
okay, let's
get to the chase. I expected nothing less from Maggie's brother.
I figured though. That too, Mike. I hear what you guys do and understand Maggie has that reputation here. So look, I missed the opportunity with CryptoPunks at the point where I should have been buying in. It skyrocketed, that floor price moved from 60, and candidly, it moved down to 45. That's where I really wanted to buy in. And now the floor price, and then by Maggie's birthday, by August 20th, that floor price is $460,000. So again, something that I was looking to buy for $40,000 could have been sold for $460,000.
In a matter of weeks,
literally 40 days. But again, it's easy enough to look back and say, hey, this is something that happened. I was right there. Yeah. I was about to make this move. So while all of that's going on, I let another project go right by where I'm like, maybe I should buy into Board Ape Yacht Club. I saw the next kind of thing going on and was like, oh, I don't know. And then and now I'm just trying to speed along through this story. I then decide, you know what? And then I see Bored Ape Yacht Club do the same thing. Now they're untouchable. Now the entry level there is the
second one you've missed out on.
The second one I missed out on. So then I thought, you know what? I'm not going to miss out on another one. And I buy into another Larva Labs project, which is the good part of it. It's called Meebits, but buy in a little bit more heavily there than I'm comfortable with. So now I am into Meebits, which is again, another Larva Labs NFT project. But the whole idea of these NFTs is it's just another place to store value, right? So you could just have your Ethereum sitting in your crypto wallet and go and check your balance every day, or you could have purchased something with that Ethereum that says it was purchased for that amount of Ether or Ethereum. And so it's, you know, I would say that, you know, you guys said it best in terms of how volatile this market is and how you should not do this in your crypto or NFT unless you have that money to lose. I think you should also, because there's really only two reasons to invest in NFTs. It's ego and speculation. Either you think these things are going to be worth a whole lot more, or you want to say you're the one person that owns that particular NFT. And so that's really what's driving so much of the money that's going into NFTs. But I think you should also really love what you're investing in. Like, you know, maybe you do have some ego, maybe you have some speculation, but it is a piece of, in most cases, art. And so a lot like investing in physical art, you should love what you're invested in. I don't know that the Meebits that I invested in, I love them and they were expensive.
Do you just have one Meebit or multiple Meebits?
No, I never meant to have multiple Meebits. I bought one and then
like a whole family of Meebits?
No, I have
they look like little Lego characters, by the way. I Googled it while you're talking.
Yes. And what I need, which
I got like 50 Meebits in my pile of Legos downstairs if you want some for free.
So here was the other interesting, and I'm going to keep this short, but so a lot of the crypto frenzy is around institutional investors, right? So it's one thing when the three of us are putting smaller amounts in, but then big companies, you talked about your Grayscale, you know, hedge or index fund. There's all kinds of larger institutional investors that have gotten into crypto, and those prices have been pumping because of that. NFTs, same thing. Visa bought a CryptoPunk and the market went insane. So what I need is like, and then Steph Curry brought a Bored Ape Yacht Club. What I need is like LeBron to buy a Meebit or some big news to come out. And the reason that I bought into that project was because Larva Labs got repped by a Hollywood marketing agency called UTA. And so I saw that on my birthday as like a sign that, all right, this is going to be the next big project that explodes. So it would be really nice if that happens. And look, I'm in these NFTs for the long term as well. So they're sitting in my portfolio. Let's hope they have the same things happen that's happened to other big projects. And thanks for letting me tell you guys about them.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show.
This was fun.
I think Meebits is a good point to end on. Yeah. Thank you for coming on the show, Alex. This was awesome. It was for anyone who, you know, this was over their head, don't feel bad. 50% of what Alex was saying was over my head also. But I think it's also fascinating. Like, this is the point of like, I've actually learned so much from you, Alex, and just the kind of casual conversations we've had on this. And then today's discussion also, I think it's good for people to understand what's going on and make a thoughtful decision on whether they want to play in that market or not. So hopefully this episode has helped you guys to do that and just understand a little bit more about this space. And yeah, thanks for coming on, Alex.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you very much. You're
awesome. It's really great to meet you. I look forward to seeing you around, hopefully sometime in person.
All right. Sounds good.
I'll talk to you soon, Alex. Thank you.
Awesome. Right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Be good. Bye.
Thanks everybody for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard today, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
If you have thoughts or questions, we would love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370, or you can hit us up on Instagram or Facebook.